Love Talk Radio.
Readers Entertainment Radio, where variety is the spice of life.
Welcome, everyone, to Readers Entertainment Radio. I'm your host, Sheila English, and tonight we're talking with two amazing authors who have very unique stories to tell. Both of them have utilized the CreateSpace platform. We're gonna talk a little bit about that, find out what that took, taking that route, and a little bit more about some things that CreateSpace is doing. Primarily, though, we're going to talk about their amazing books. So please welcome the author of One Night of Madness, Stokes McMillan, and returning to our show, we have author of Skullduggery, 45 True Tales of Disturbing the Dead, Brian Kennard. Welcome, gentlemen.
Well, thank you, Sheila. It's great to be here.
Yeah, same here.
And I'm very glad you are, too. So for our listeners, quickly, you can call into the show and chat with us at 646-200-4071, or you can stop by, have the chat room open. If you'd like to send some questions or comments there, please feel free to do so. Now, both authors have written nonfiction stories that are bound to disturb you on some level, and rightly so. I want to start with you, Stokes, but let me tell our listeners just a little bit more about you. Stokes McMillan is fourth generation, born and raised in Atala County, Mississippi, where
right.
The events of One Night of Madness occurred. Now, while writing his sideline, his day job is at the Johnson Space Center in Houston, Texas, where he works for NASA as an engineer for the space shuttle. That's very exciting all by itself. And he lives there with his wife. One Night of Madness is his first book, and you can find out more going to www.stokesmcmillan.com, and of course I'll make sure that URL goes up on our blog so that you can find him, because this is really an amazing story, not just the story itself, which is of course amazing, but we're going to find out kind of the history of how this story came about. Now, Stokes, there's even more to tell than just that brief bio, obviously. Tell us how your father had a part in this, and then tell us what happened in Mississippi all those years ago.
Okay, well, this all happened in 1950 in a remote part of central Mississippi near my hometown, and my hometown is called Kosciuszko, kind of an odd name for a central Mississippi town, but Kosciuszko. Living near there was a family of black sharecroppers, and they lived on a large cotton plantation. So the family was the father, the mother, and five of their children. Well, one cold, rainy night in 1950, in January, five white men who were drunk on moonshine paid this family a surprise visit. The group's ringleader broke into the house, and he... In the end, he murdered three children, and their ages were 12, 8, and 4, and he mortally wounded their father, shot him in the back, and so the father was paralyzed, and just a tragic story. He was lying on the floor conscious but unable to move, and he listened to his young 4-year-old daughter as she called out to him for help and until she died. Now, the mother of the children escaped. She ran with her infant son in her arms and fled out into the night. And the mother and the son are still alive and living in Mississippi. But despite being the height of the Jim Crow era in Mississippi, when too many white-on-black crimes went unpunished, this crime was unacceptable to all the people of Mississippi. The vicious killing of children, no matter what their race, just went over the limits of humanity. And so the state of Mississippi put together the largest manhunt ever, the largest manhunt in their history. And they brought out the bloodhounds coming from the state penitentiary, and the bloodhounds were led by a prison trustee named Hogjaw Mullins. Hogjaw chased them for 3 days and eventually found them and captured the killers. Now, how my father got involved... My dad was then a photographer for the Kosciuszko newspaper, the Star Herald, And he was present at the capture, and he took a photo of the hog jaw standing over these killers, and that and the photo was good. He realized it was pretty good, so he entered it in a national contest, and it won. This photo that my father took was named Photo of the Year of 1950, and that's the photo that's on the cover of my book. Well, the men were tried 2 months later, and Mississippi asked for the death penalty, and which was an extremely rare occurrence for a white-on-black crime in the state of Mississippi at that time. And the killers were tried, and the jury, as required by Mississippi law, the jury was 12 white men. And, you know, where you wouldn't always expect the killer to be to be convicted in a case like that, but this jury of 12 white men of his peers quickly found the men guilty. And it was a rare case of justice achieved for a crime against blacks during the Jim Crow era. Now, the jury had a hard time with the death penalty, and so a lot of fighting occurred within the jury room. And the jury, though, did finally reach a decision, but it was a very controversial decision, and so controversial that Mississippi's Nobel Prize-winning author William Faulkner wrote about it in a letter to the Memphis newspaper. And that letter is studied in that today in academia. Now, wow. I can't tell what that jury decision was. You know, I've got to give the listeners to read the book and find out what the jury decision was. You know, but so many people would think this killing occurred during the Jim Crow era, so it had to be racial. Well, surprisingly, the motive was not racial. The white killer himself had a black girlfriend, and he also had 8 mixed-race half-brothers and sisters. And yeah, they had really unusual names. Their nicknames were Sugar Gal, Bug, Rat, Hop, Lice, Ape, Kook, and Junior. And they had a dog, by the way. His name was Joe. I've got a picture of all these guys. So the motive boiled down to spurned lust for the children's mother. The killer had long lusted after the children's mother, and she rejected him. So he went in there one night to get revenge. So that's basically the story of this.
I think that, it's a true story. I mean, this has the makings of a movie. You know, it's a true story. There's all this historical significance with the jury and all these others. I mean, there's real drama. You know, now is that how the book reads, or is it more like a movie, or more like your own personal perspective of the events as you discovered them?
Well, I'm not in the book at all. No, I strive to keep my personal opinions and viewpoints and experiences out of it, because as you heard, it's just such a fantastic story, and the characters are in it are fantastic. And I just simply wanted to tell the story, the good and the bad of it. But you know, even though One Night of Madness is a nonfiction, I mean it's a true story. It still reads like a novel. You know, I think of it as a cross between two of my favorite books, To Kill a Mockingbird and In Cold Blood.
Yeah, I can see that. Was it emotional? I mean, did you find yourself getting emotional reading about, because you were just talking about, and as you're talking, you're a very good storyteller, because as you're talking, I'm imagining you're saying that, you know, the father was shot and could hear his child crying out for him. Was it difficult, emotionally difficult, to put yourself through that, to kind of relive those things?
Oh, goodness, yes. I mean, several of the people in the book are still living, like the mother of the children, and several of the people that were around in the area. Several, you know, the half the children that, you know, Kook and Bug and all them, several of them are still alive. So I interviewed them and, you know, was reliving the story while I talked to them, and it was quite emotional. Some days were really tough.
Yeah, I can't. I find myself personally as a reader, I am always drawn to true stories. I just am. And the same goes for movies, too. I love fiction, and I do read fiction. But when you have a story, I mean, you don't even have to embellish on this. This is just, you have these poor children, you have, talking about this guy was lusting after the mother, and trying to imagine what was that like for her to just, all she could do is grab one child and run.
Right. She had to let go of the hand of her 4-year-old daughter at one point. I talked to her about that, and she, regrets that to this day, of course.
Well, yeah, and it does make me wonder, because I'm a mother, too. It's like, I want to know, what was that like for her? I mean, do we find out her perspective or her feelings of how things went as the trial went along and when that completed?
Well, yeah, a lot of it. Her name is Mariella. Mariella is a very quiet woman and introspective. I guess this experience has caused her to be that way. But even back at that time, she was pretty quiet and she internalized everything. So she had a hard time. She didn't attend the funeral of her children or her husband's. She just couldn't handle that. But so during the trial, I think she sat in the courtroom basically quiet. But I tried to convey that feelings of her and her personality in the book. And if I can, let me tell you about the first time I met her. I was researching the book. I had no idea she was still alive. She was about 85 when I wrote the book.
Oh, wow.
And when I found out that she was alive, I called her up and told her, can I come talk to you? So I went and talked to her and her son. The son that she ran out with now lives with her, taking care of her in her old age. And, I was really nervous and told her that, ma'am, you don't know me from Adam, and I need to ask you some questions dealing with, horrible things, the worst thing that could happen to a parent. And if you're not comfortable with any of my questions, you don't have to answer them. I'll totally understand. And she says, Lord, Lord, I've been waiting 50 years for somebody to come write this book.
Oh, wow.
She said, you're the answer to my prayers. And so, and from that point on, we got along famously. She was very open.
Wow. What an experience. I mean, just being able to talk to her is an experience, let alone, gathering the information to write the book. Now,
right.
Folks, don't go anywhere yet. I'm going to have some more questions for you, but I want to swing over and introduce our other guest, Brian Kennard. Hi, Brian. How are you?
Hi. Just fine.
I know you've been with us before. We have a lot of new listeners, so I wanted to just talk a little bit about you before we get started. Now, after 11 years of working in the corporate world, Brian, his career is behind him. That career is behind him. In December of 2009, Brian published his first book, Skullduggery, 45 True Tales of Disturbing the Dead. Brian is also a freelance writer and has articles featured in on the web at Armchair General Magazine and CNN, Unsplained. I'm looking at this great big long list. It's like, wow, you are a busy, busy man. And then you opened Grave Distractions Publications. And it says here that the goal of GDP is to help authors wishing to make use of the independent publishing movement to make their dreams a reality. I love that. To date, GDP has been involved in the print and ebook publication of 15 titles, and 4 additional titles are scheduled for the first quarter of 2011. And you can find out more at www.gravedistractions.com. Brian, you've been doing a lot since the last time we spoke.
I have. I believe we were just getting Grave Distractions Publications off the ground, and we've had a great success with that, helping authors to achieve their dreams, like you said. It's kind of the way I started out with all this and writing my first book, Skullduggery. I decided that I really wanted to not only write, but help other people that were like me, that might need some of the technical help with getting their book off the ground or marketing help. So we've been able to help a number of authors from anything from, you know, creating just blurbs for them to full production. We even do marketing for a cigar company, Miraculous Templar Cigars in Los Angeles. So got our fingers in a lot of pies right now.
I like to call that multiple avenues of income.
I do too.
You got to love the variety. You never get bored. Well, I want to talk a little bit about your publishing. But first, I want to just, for those people who haven't heard of skullduggery, tell us what skullduggery is, and then tell us about your book.
Okay. Well, skullduggery is a compilation of 45 real-life tales of grave robberies and other unsavory things that happen to people after they depart this mortal coil. And the book contains stories, you know, ranging from common folks to the famous, you know, including people like Elvis, Einstein, Abraham Lincoln, Groucho Marx, Charlie Chaplin, Thomas Paine, have all had some experiences, or their bodies have had some experiences with grave robbers.
Well, I remember the last time we spoke, one of my favorite shows, by the way, and so much so you and I have kind of stayed in touch on Facebook all this time, but I remember you telling me about how hard it was to get Elvis just so that he could be buried there at his mansion and all the things that had gone on behind that, and it's so vastly interesting, and stuff I had no idea.
Well, and that was the whole point. I mean, these represent hidden histories of people's existences. I mean, most biographies end with, and so-and-so died on, you know, such-and-such a date, the end. Well, that's not the whole story of somebody's existence, necessarily. And people don't like to talk about these things, so you've never heard of Elvis's story, as well documented as Elvis's life was. So that's the greatest Elvis story that's never really been told. I got to interview long-term employees of Graceland and a news reporter who was on the scene the night the attempt happened to take Elvis's body. So it was a really interesting story to write.
Well, and I encourage people to go and check out skullduggery, and because I know it's so vastly interesting. It's one of those things that you just don't think about, and then when you start reading it, you can't put it down. It's like, no, really, this happens. So now I'm going to switch gears for just a moment. Brian, I want to talk about publishing for a bit. Now, you
sure.
opened Grave Distractions Publications.
Uh-huh.
I know you've used the CreateSpace platform. Now, is this something that anyone can do? Is this really difficult?
Using CreateSpace itself is very, very easy. Right? They have really made a user-friendly platform. It's not using CreateSpace that's the hard part of it.
Uh-huh.
In order to get your book to a point where they can print it, you have to create both layout the interior and make a cover. Those are uploaded on PDFs to CreateSpace, and they print directly from your PDF given their specifications. Well, in order to even get to that point, you have to have a pretty technical knowledge of both Adobe products, Adobe Acrobat, Adobe Distiller, some type of layout platform like InDesign or Quark, one of those, and graphics programs to create a good-looking cover. So it depends on your level of technical competency. And that's where we've really found our niche, is if someone is having problems with one of those pieces of the puzzle or all of them, we're able to step in and help them out to get their book to a professional-looking level so they can utilize all the other CreateSpace perks that they have.
See, that's a really excellent niche. You know, and not trying to sell myself, but I am going to say that I'm currently using the CreateSpace platform to write my own nonfiction book about book trailers and marketing, and that's actually where I got stuck. And it became so frustrating just looking at it. I really did. And I actually consider myself to be a pretty technically savvy person, but I got pretty frustrated, and even to the point that if it affected my, it's like, oh, why am I even going to go back and redo these edits? I'm never going to figure this out. Can anybody contact you and and say, look, I, you know, can you help me do this?
Sure.
And have some service?
Yeah, sure do. My email address is Brian, and that's B-R-I-N, at gravedistractions.com, or give me a call sometime. Area code 615-285-3290. I'd be happy to, you know, talk to you about what you need, what your project is, how I can help out. You know, and if it's interior layout that you need work with, we'll do that. I mean, we're not one of these sell you a huge package of everything that you don't need. I want to give the budding author exactly what they need, no more, no less. So that's what we do.
Well, I'm glad we got to talk about that. I didn't know you were offering that service, so that's perfect. Now, let me just kind of swing back over here to Stokes for a moment. Stokes, I know you've used the CreateSpace platform as well. Now, is that something that you would recommend to someone? Did you have an easier time of it?
Oh, I certainly would recommend it. I mean, frankly, I was surprised at how pleasant my experience with CreateSpace was when I used them. Wish I'd known about Brian's service, though. That would have been helpful, too. But my reason to go into self-publishing in the first place was, my first consideration was speed. I told you how many of the participants in my book are still alive, but they are all elderly, anywhere from, you know, late 70s to the 90s, because this all happened 60 years ago. Now, there used to be a lot more of these people alive, but as I neared completion of writing the book, several of these people who I came to know as friends, they began passing away. And I knew that going the traditional publishing route could take a long time to get a book from submission to printing. I've heard things from all the way from 1 year to 2 years. And that process is much shorter with self-publishing, so I decided to self-publish.
Yeah.
And I made a list of requirements I wanted in a publisher, and then used the internet to look into several companies, and found that CreateSpace met most of my requirements, and so they're the ones I went with, and I haven't regretted my decision. I can honestly say I've had no hassles with them. Amazingly enough, you know, when you deal with companies nowadays, it seems like you have a hassle. I've not had a single hassle with CreateSpace. They were responsive to my desires and very pleasant to deal with, and most importantly, they were good. I'm very pleased with the book that we turned out together, and I would recommend them, and I do. I do recommend CreateSpace to any author wanting to turn their words into a quality book.
You know, CreateSpace is, of course, associated with Amazon, and I was really interested in it. It's called the ABNA, and that's the Amazon Breakthrough Novel Award that Amazon and Penguin Group is putting on right now, and it's a competition to search for, like, the next popular novel, and the prize is you get a contract with a major publisher and a $15,000 advance. Now, do you see something like that as kind of a way for aspiring authors to kind of get their foot in the door?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, I think all aspiring authors hear the horror stories about how hard it is to break into the world of traditional publishing. Well, one way to do that, one significant way for a self-published author to get noticed by a major publisher is to win some prestigious award. So, yeah, I think it's great that Amazon and Penguin came up with this Breakthrough Novel Award. Surely it won't be easy to win, but the
book.
Yeah, I would, because I'm sure there are hundreds of thousands of entries. But the books that do win or even make the final cuts in the competition, you know, they're the cream of books that have risen to the top. And so major publishers know this. And so winners and finalists, they catch the eyes of these major publishers. And I think that it makes sense then that the major publishers are more willing to take a chance on them. So, yeah, I think it's a great thing for novelists to do, to enter this competition.
Now, I noticed that we're probably right at about 4 minutes, so I'm going to skip ahead to something that we do on this show called The Round Robin, in which I ask one question and each of you have a chance to respond. And Brian, I think I'm going to go ahead and put you on the hot seat.
All right.
And start with you. Writing nonfiction, something that's true, sounds like it'd be easy to research and just retell the story. How much goes into researching a nonfiction work?
Quite a bit. I spent 3 months of part-time research and 4 months of full-time research and writing to get Skullduggery into print. A lot of the problem that you have is once you've got all your research done, is distilling it down to actually finding the truth of events. You know, I would comb over newspaper articles about some of these events and find discrepancies even between major newspaper articles on things that actually happen. So you've really got to pick through your sources and play a little detective work too. Plus, you've got to make sure your facts are right because somebody out there will email you and say, whoa, wait a minute, buddy. You know, you've screwed this up or this up. You know, and I augmented my own research with doing a number of interviews too because those are invaluable to getting to what the truth is. But it's not as easy as you'd think.
Now, Stokes, over to you with the same question. I know now you had like a scrapbook that helped you, but I'm sure, I mean, it sounds like you went and spoke with someone. You know, how hard was it to do all of that research?
Oh, I totally agree with Brian. It took me 2 years of research and then five more years to write the book. I found that writing a nonfiction very difficult. The thing is, everything has to be, like he said, everything has to be correct and possible. It's unlike a fiction where, you know, you just can't make things up. Nonfiction is supposed to be true accounts, and critics blast you if you make stuff up and present them as factual. Oh, the scrapbook you mentioned, that came about because of the award my father won for taking the best photograph of 1950. It was a big deal nationally. So my mother, who was a vigorous scrapbooker, she assembled over 50 of my father's pictures that he had taken of the incident. She put those along with, you know, dozens of newspaper clippings from around the nation and put them in this scrapbook. And 40 years later, I inherited this scrapbook, and for the first time, I really got down into it and started reading the clippings and finding out what it was about. Even then, though, the contents of the scrapbook were about the crime and the trial, and I wanted the background on all the people. So, just like Brian did, you know, I held dozens of interviews and with the people in the book, and I went to libraries and met the Mississippi archives and all kind of places, and I spent hundreds, if not thousands, of hours in those places, and so in dozens of people's homes. And so no, I didn't find writing nonfiction to be easy at all.
Well, it's almost to me, listening to both of you talk, and I know I hear the piano telling us that we're running out of time, but I just, you know, I guess I didn't really think about it, is that with fiction, you can just make up anything, and who's going to check your facts? But if you're writing nonfiction, you better make sure that you're checking those facts and going above and beyond, because somebody can call you on it.
And they do. Yes, they do.
Well, gentlemen, I want to thank you both so much for taking the time to chat with us today. I see we have a whole lot of live listeners today, so that's always exciting, but... Want to make sure everybody knows that we'll get a blog going up and send that out, and the podcast will be live here pretty soon. Gentlemen, again, thank you so much for taking time out of your day.
Quite welcome.
Well, Sheila, this has really been fun and a pleasure. Thank you for having both of us.
Thank you. And I want to thank our listeners for joining us here at Readers Entertainment Radio, and you can download the podcast and share it on your own Facebook or MySpace or download it from iTunes or several places to find it. And you can also find the blog at readersentertainment.com. I'm your host, Sheila English, and thank you for joining me.
This show brought to you by Circle of Seven Productions, www.cosproductions.com. Please be sure to subscribe and welcome to our circle.